stay in South Asia, but move from Bangladesh a little bit up in altitude to Nepal, where the United Nations Population Fund, UNFPA, asked JSI to carry out some assessments of non-governmental organizations that UNFPA had been supporting over these years and was in the process of phasing out. So we did these sustainability assessments with them, and that's what this presentation will focus on. I have no relationships to disclose. And UNFPA supported the NGOs and supported this assessment, and we hired a local organization called Health and Development Associates to do the actual assessments in Nepali. And thanks to UNFPA, JSI, and the NGOs for their inputs on various aspects of the project. To get us feeling in Nepali, say namaste, the Nepali greeting. It's a wonderful country, wonderful people, as many of you probably know. Our session outline, I'll just give some background and the overall objectives, talk about the UNFPA program in Nepal, the methodology findings, and summary recommendations. To give a brief background on socio-demographic figures, it's about 28 million people, 17% urban, population growth rate a little more than Bangladesh, as you saw. Contraceptive prevalence rate a little bit less. Many people think of Nepal like that big mountain you just saw, and mainly Buddhist population, but actually the large majority is Hindu, and most of the country is either hill or lowland. And a lot of the population is what's called this Dalit class of untouchable caste, so-called untouchable caste. And this is important for this study. This population was the main target audience of these NGOs, and they were actually led by Dalits, Dalit-led and serving the Dalit community. As I said, the population mostly lives in the hills and lowlands. Nepal is split into three fairly equal parts, mountains, hills, and lowlands. Lowlands called the Terai, and that's actually where most of the people live, as well as in the hills. UNFPA support to the NGOs there, they've provided direct reproductive health support to Dalit-led and women-led NGOs since about 2007 to work reproductive health into the NGO programs. The public health sector systems at the time were disrupted by Maoist insurgency, and so the health system was suffering, and by UNFPA stepping in some of these areas, it provided needed support, especially for reproductive health services. Following the peace agreement and a new large local development project called LGCDP that I'll talk about in a little bit, UNFPA decided to shift away from directly supporting the NGOs to one of more indirect technical assistance and trying to get the NGOs to link into national programs. So they began phasing out their support in 2010. They asked JSI to assess the capacity and sustainability of these NGOs and make recommendations on best way forward for sustainability. The objectives were along those lines, to assess the existing organizational capacity and sustainability at the six NGOs that they had been supporting, listed here, and to make recommendations to the NGOs and to UNFPA for future approaches to enhancing sustainability. So those were the objectives of the assessments that we did. Most of the NGOs you see here are located in districts in the Terai and one in the Hill region. And to start off the assessments, one of the first things we did was give them a framework on sustainability. These NGOs are very small, very simple, and really had never heard the concept sustainability before, so it was very interesting discussions we had. But we started off by stressing that sustainability is not just having money to do services. It's not just about finance. And so we said that it's really at least a three-component process. You have to have programs that people want to sustain. So you have to have programmatic sustainability. You have to have good organizational systems to manage those programs. And of course, you have to have the finances too. So the intersection of all of these is sustainability, we said, and all of that within environmental factors that can also affect how sustainable organizations can become. The methodology was that in each NGO we did either 2 or 3 day participatory workshops to self-assess the sustainability, and the tool that we used had 50 questions that the group discussed as a whole and self-rated on a scale of 1 to 4. The methodology was basically, therefore, a group discussion leading to consensus scores. But then the scoring was not really the main thing. The discussion was the main thing. And out of that, when you, especially on the places where you scored low and rated yourself as low capacity, you made an action plan with proposed actions, priorities, responsibilities, timeline, budget, et cetera. That was the main outcome of these assessments. And we did look at the finances of the NGOs, really very rudimentary, but we made some interesting findings and recommendations on finances as well. The tool, as I said, had 50 questions that we looked at, and the group went through and discussed each one of them in 8 different areas that fell under the topics of organizational, financial, and programmatic sustainability, as you see here. The questions looked like this. This is the first question on vision and mission, and this was the first category: vision, mission, values, attitudes, organizational culture. For each question, there's low capacity, basic capacity, moderate capacity, strong capacity, rated 1 through 4, and description of what that means. So the group discussed, decided where they were. If they couldn't decide after a while, we allowed them to say, like, it's 2.5, and then they could write comments below. So basically, they had long discussions on each one of these questions and decided whether they were strong, moderate, or needed assistance. The methodology was pretty successful. There's a very high degree of NGO participation. The 3-day workshops had the same people all the way through, all day long. We thought there were some biases that naturally NGOs want to say that they're doing pretty well, so the scores maybe were higher than truly reflected. But the group discussions and action planning were really the most interesting and meaningful thing, and the groups thought that the process itself was very motivating. Also, the idea that we gave them of what sustainability is and that it's more than just finances was sort of revealing to them and really helped them move forward on the non-financial areas. As I said, the NGOs were very small, very simple. This is the office of one of the NGOs on the top floor there, just out in a very small town in rural Nepal. Here's one of the workshops on the roof of a building, and the action planning process, done on a whiteboard, but with great, these NGOs were incredibly motivated, very interested in the process, and incredibly interested in serving their communities. So that's the process. Let's look at what some of the findings were. First finding is what the NGOs are like themselves, and a little bit to my surprise, the UNFPA is working with these on reproductive health, but really, we looked at the mission statements and the objectives, and only about half of them had health in their mission statement and had reproductive health as one of their main objectives. So it was a struggle for UNFPA to add reproductive health onto their programs, and they accepted it pretty well, but that's an important thing going forward to sustainability, as we'll see. They all have women as a target audience, but when you look at the women's participation, just in terms of workshop participant, which, by the way, the NGOs are so small, pretty much everybody, staff and board members in each NGO participated in these workshops, and in most cases it was less than 50% women. These are the scores. As I said, they tend to be pretty high, so the scores themselves aren't all that interesting, ranging from 2.5 to 3.5. There were some areas that were weaker than others, and I think, the discussion was the main thing that was of interest. This is each one of the 8 areas of the tool, and these are the mean scores of the 6 NGOs. More interesting, maybe, is the areas for improvement, because as you saw, for every one of the 50 questions, they scored 1, 2, 3, or 4. And basically, 1 or 2 are the areas where they rated themselves weak. So if you just count the number of questions where they rated themselves 1 or 2, you see that there are actually quite a few that fall into that category. So these are all just the number of questions or items in each one of these areas for each one of the 6 NGOs where they rated themselves as needing improvement. So when they go to make action plans, these are going to be the areas that they focus on. When they went to the action plans, most of them actually proposed an action for all 50 questions. And then we went through a prioritization process and tried to get them to classify either high importance and high urgency, medium importance and urgency, low importance and urgency, and still some of them came out with about 20 highest important actions. So sometimes they were too ambitious and a little bit vague about what they said they were going to do, but there were many of them that were good proposals that required few or no financial resources, such as making their staff and board members more aware of the mission statement and vision, things like that, that they could do without any resources. And in follow-up to this, we have found that many such actions have, in fact, been taken. On the more resource-heavy side, we found that there's a heavy focus on training and capacity building, especially in these four areas mentioned here. So this is an area that UNFPA really wants to follow up on in the next year or two, how to improve the capacity in resource mobilization, proposal writing, finance management, M&E, organizational development, and leadership among these NGOs. We did look at finances. The financial information was not very good, not very reliable, but one thing that was very clear is that they're very heavily dependent on external resources. UNFPA gave these NGOs funds. They had not been receiving funds from external donors before, and so as a percent of their program income over these 3 years, these top four NGOs are almost completely dependent on UNFPA for their programs. The lower two have more varied sources. So obviously that's going to be a big challenge going forward. The other challenges, these NGOs are not like the other clinics, programs, organizations that have been talked about so far. They're mostly community awareness and community mobilization organizations. They don't have clinics. They don't sell services, so they're pretty limited in local income generation. So they got a challenge there. They are very, very highly motivated to do this social mobilization and community awareness, and they were covering reproductive health and other aspects of things like ending caste discrimination, but those are difficult to actually generate income from. Little or no experience in sales of services. And also, really, to be fair, and we had long discussions with UNFPA, their interventions were very short, these 2 to 3 years of infusion of income and then deciding to phase back really wasn't quite enough to get these NGOs with a lot of capacity to go out and get new proposals on their own. What UNFPA wants to do, and it's sort of the main strategy that they've promoted going forward, is to tie into this new large project that I mentioned before that is multi-donor funded, called Local Governance and Community Development Program, or LGCDP, a major project to provide decentralized and integrated development through district development communities and village development committees, so integrated development. And if we could tie into that, it's, in theory, a great idea. There are some problems that I'll mention in a bit, but this is UNFPA's main strategy, to encourage those NGOs to write grants that come out as invitations periodically and get grants to be funded through the LGCDP system. The advantage of that, of course, is coherence with the existing government and having NGOs tie in and complement public sector services. But in its simplest format, to me, this really represents more donor substitution rather than actually building capacity, and we're probably just finding a new way of funding without having really built the capacity of these NGOs. Some of the disadvantages, the NGOs need to know how this system works and be able to tap into it. They need better proposal writing skills than they have now. Even if they can, it's unlikely that the funding will be sufficient to cover what UNFPA was providing before. And even if it is, The Integrated Local Development Program does not have health. The reproductive health is a very high priority, so it might be hard for these NGOs to actually get funded through this mechanism. Add on top of that, problems of bureaucracy. We actually saw during this last year that there was nowhere near as much money coming through this project as there was supposed to be. So lots of disadvantages there, and it doesn't build them the skills that they need to go out and reach to other donors. So our main recommendations, UNFPA needs to help NGOs pare down their action plans to the highest priority and focus on what's really important. They need to follow up and encourage NGOs to focus early on actions related to vision and mission to make sure that the NGOs really know what they want to do. In a lot of cases, this isn't really there. And to focus on low-cost, high-priority actions. Proposal writing is very important if they're going to tie into this LGCDP system. That's obvious. And also, we talked with UNFPA about the possibility of having a safety net during this time, because as it is, a lot of things have closed down. And so the NGOs really need some help. Longer-term support capacity building of NGOs, encourage NGOs to keep reproductive health a priority. This is a problem, as we saw initially. And UNFPA needs to take a long-term view on sustainability, not expect that everything is going to happen soon. And there is some post-workshop follow-up I just mentioned quickly, sorry, that UNFPA has queried the NGOs and found that a lot of actions have been taken already. And UNFPA has supported training already. NGOs have received additional training from other organizations. And there's training actually being done by district-based organizations. There actually is capacity in Nepal for training out at district level. On the other hand, many UNFPA-supported activities have been discontinued, and one NGO is currently not functional due to leadership issues. UNFPA has a very strong commitment to capacity building, and so for the next year or two, they're looking for ways to not only find sources to have these NGOs continue, but to build their capacity so they are truly sustainable and can reach out in a more stronger situation to their donors for continued support. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim, to bring to us these important conclusions and results about the experience with these organizations. And now we have 10 minutes for questions, if you have some questions. And Dr. Rob, if you'd like to be here, if you have. It's okay? There are questions? Okay.
Curious about wanting to know what occurred during the provider visit. What we were actually looking for was actually how long the provider was able to spend with the client. And so what we did was we looked at national family averages for what a national family average patient provider time would be, and that ranges from about 9 to 15 minutes. Anne?
Your question, please.
Nominated by the community, or was were they vetted somehow, or? It's primarily discussed with the community support groups, you know, list of the peer promoters, and from among themselves, they nominated, basically, they selected these five can work as a peer promoter.
My question to you, Dr. Rao, was that they were volunteers or did they get money? Because you said that you wanted the public sector to absorb the community support groups, so.
No, they are all volunteers, you know, they are the people from the locality, but the public sector to take care of them, you know, in subsequent when they will be developing their projects, so that there should be a mechanism how they communicate with the public sector health system.
So that there's a referral.
Referral or some sort of a working relationship. And most of the cases, some of the, all the community support group chairperson were the elected local representative, Union Parishad chairman. So he has some financial, you know, authority for the development in his area, but nothing with related to health. So he can at least mobilize some resources from other development activities to the health if they take it as a real case.
Your question, please.
To Williams. Tim, the tool you used in Nepal looked very familiar to me. I think it's the highest form of flattery that you chose to use one of MSH's tools. But my question has to do with the one chart that showed that I think three of the NGOs, or maybe four, have been wholly funded by UNFPA throughout that time period. And I'm wondering if they were NGOs created for the purpose of receiving those funds, or did they have a track record before?
They did have a track record before, and one of the things I didn't have time to quite mention specifically was that was program-related income. So they do have other income, but their programs were completely funded by UNFPA. And a lot of them work as volunteers, so their costs are actually very low. I also want to mention about the tool that I think you're probably thinking of, the MOST tool, that we did use some questions from MOST, but actually there are other tools that have that same format, and the one that this is closest to, I had one slide there, but I took it out, is one developed by initiatives with contributions from JSI called the Organizational Capacity Assessment, or OCA tool. But we did use some MOST questions. It is a form of flattery, and it's a good methodology, yeah.
Your question?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think it is possible to create a win-win situation, and that's certainly what UNFPA wants to do and what the NGOs want to do. And in theory, it's possible. One of the problems with such a decentralized system is that it might work very well in some districts and not so well in others. And some of the other drawbacks I had on that one slide also need to be considered, that in some places health and reproductive health are not really high priority. So the NGOs might get funded to do Dalit support social mobilization work, but I think supporting the reproductive health work that UNFPA was funding is more of a fight. And I think it is possible to get a win-win situation, but it's probably an uneven thing across the country, and it will take a lot of work, but it's something they should work toward.
If you don't have any more questions, we have an announcement, please.
Are there more questions?
No. Thank you very much for attending this session, and now we have a last announcement from.
Okay, this was given to me by Erica Fishman and Lisa Hare, who are the co-chairs of the Management and Sustainability Task Force. And this session was organized by the Management and Sustainability Task Force, which I used to be very involved with, and will hopefully restart today. The task force serves as a means to increase communication on management and sustainability issues, the kinds of things that we talked about here on the panel today, focusing on sharing experiences between those members working internationally and those working domestically. So part of the effort is to get the domestic and international cross-cutting experience. So the task force has a meeting in room 702 right now, and any of you are welcome to. Please join if you'd like to.
Thank you very much, and have a nice evening.